All right, I will call this Committee for Citizen Involvement session to order at 5:30 p.m. on this, the 20th day of June, 2017. This evening, we'll be talking about accessory dwelling units, or ADUs, and the program. I know I saw Sandy do a presentation to the City Council. It's been, was it 2 weeks back or so, I think?
Multiple times.
Yeah, multiple times. And so it's our turn today to have her discuss kind of the citizen outreach portion of this process. So I'll turn it over to you.
Good evening, commissioners. And it is my opportunity to be before you to speak tonight. I've been to some of your meetings, but I don't think I've ever presented before you. So it's my chance to get to know you and for you to get to know me. So I'm the Comprehensive Planning Manager, and I've been working with the City Council since last October on developing an affordable housing strategy. And the summary of that is been put together, and Council saw this, I think that meeting that Greg was referring to. And so this is the backdrop, so to speak, of what we'll be talking about tonight. So one of the strategies that Council has directed staff to address or to take on is to encourage the construction of accessory dwelling units. So I'm going to give you some background on that, and then we'll get more into the actual agenda item. But this is going to set the context. So some of the key findings from the affordable housing strategy is that there is a lack of available housing at all levels. And so that's from emergency shelter, even people that are homeless don't have a place to go, transitional housing, subsidized housing, which we're calling income qualified housing, market rate rentals. You were talking earlier about how difficult it is even just to get a rental, spaces among manufactured home parks, as well as the inventory of homes for sale is very small. So it's a very much of a seller's market right now. So we have a lack of housing across the whole continuum. Vacancy rates in Springfield are less than 1%. Healthy would be 5%. Not only is it difficult to find housing, those that can have housing, a lot of them find that it is expensive. So we say it's expensive, or a household is cost burdened if they are paying more than 30% of their annual gross income on rent or mortgage and basic utilities. That doesn't include your internet and such, but just your basic utilities adding up to more than 30% would be cost burden. So when we look at how many households in Springfield are cost burdened, we find that 53% of all renters are cost burdened, and 36% of owners. And when you look at the graph on the right here, the cost burden of being more than 50%, so they're paying more than half their income just to maintain their housing, a significant number of households, more than 2,500 households in Springfield that are renters, are in that situation, and more than 1,500 owners. So those are the people that are really on the edge, that are precarious. Something happens, as illness, an injury, some kind of emergency, and they could be without housing. So what's going on here? So what's happening, if you look over time, from 2000 to 2013, that this line here is showing the median household income. So that has increased by 20%. But compared to the housing costs, rent has increased by 39%, and the house values, so those that would be owning their, the value of their homes, has increased by 43%. So that's unsustainable. I mean, how long can we keep going where housing costs keep increasing that much faster than incomes? So trying to address these issues, Council's been looking at strategies to address the problems across the whole housing continuum. with the goal of increasing the supply and accessibility of affordable housing in Springfield. So accessory dwelling units is one component or one strategy in the overall strategy. So accessory dwelling units are can be known as granny flats or mother-in-law units or backyard cottages. You all kind of have an idea what accessory dwelling units are. So in the code, our definition is a secondary self-contained dwelling unit that may be allowed only in conjunction with a detached single-family dwelling. So secondary meaning subordinate in size, location, and appearance to the primary dwelling. And self-contained meaning it has its own kitchen, bathroom, and sleeping area. So in Springfield's code, ADUs, accessory dwelling units, can be located within the main dwelling. So that would be, for example, above a garage or a basement apartment or a garage conversion. So that would be the left example. It could be attached to, so that could be like you're adding on another bedroom or you're adding on an accessory dwelling unit to the house, or it can be detached from the primary house, like the backyard cottage. So the public policy benefits of ADUs are not only just to address the housing shortage, but some others as well. So we have that if we can increase the number of accessory dwelling units, we are increasing the number and type of affordable housing units without consuming land. And in particular, where we found in our analysis the rental market is tightest is for the small units, the one bedrooms and studio apartments. Those are the most competitive. And so this accessory dwelling unit meets that market niche.
Yeah.
So not only does it make good use of land in that we're not consuming more land for the dwelling units, but we're taking advantage of the existing infrastructure. So the street system, water, sewer, it's all there already. We're creating opportunities for intergenerational living. That's the idea of the mother-in-law or granny flat, where you can have a member of your family living on the same property as you or whatever. Or you could have the on-site caretakers or assistants. And as Springfield's population continues to age and have more and more seniors, I'm hopeful that this could really be a way to help people stay in place, where they can either stay in their home and have somebody, a young person or an assistant, come, and even if they're not doing caretaking, but just to be available for those emergency situations, or maybe there's some arrangement in exchange for rent, or even if it's someone who needs to sell their house, but they can stay in the neighborhood because they can move into a smaller accessory dwelling unit if their husband has died or whatever. So then that way it diversifies the demographics of an existing neighborhood. It provides that income producing option, so a financial benefit to the property owners. And then it triggers economic development at a local level because it's providing work for our local contractors and builders. So this is not the big corporations that are coming in to do major developments. These are our local contractors who are going to be getting the business.
So emerging small businesses, there's a lot of potential for small contractors in doing this.
Right. So there are three ways that the council has identified to encourage construction of these accessory dwelling units. So one is by temporarily waiving the system development charges. So system development charges are assessed at the time of building permit, and they pay a portion of the broader infrastructure system to support that development. So council has agreed to waive those for 2 years starting on July 1st. Council has also directed staff to submit a request to Willamette Lane Park and Recreation District and Metropolitan Wastewater Management Commission to also waive their SDCs. So I know that the Metropolitan Wastewater Management Commission has already started discussing that. I don't know about Willamette Lane.
They have not.
Okay.
But we know it's on the horizon.
So. Okay. Just sent the letter off last week, so.
We've got a board meeting next week, so.
Okay. And I'm realizing my number system got messed up, but anyway. second, the real number two here is to promote awareness about the possibilities for accessory dwelling units. So council believes that a lot of people don't even know that that would be an option for them. They may own a house and they never even considered it because they didn't even know it was an option. And then third, to revise the development code to make it easier and potentially less expensive for homeowners to add an accessory dwelling unit. And that particular is where you're coming from. So we will be amending the development code. And so what's before you tonight in particular is the citizen involvement process for amending that code. But we would also take your comments and what should be number two in that broader effort of promoting awareness and about accessory dwelling units, since we'll probably be doing both concurrently. And then to give you an idea of what council's already directed for consideration in the code amendments, I have this list. So one thing they've asked us to look at is allowing accessory dwelling units in the medium density residential zone. Currently, they're only allowed in the low density residential zone. And in that, and it's also only outside the Washburn neighborhood district. So, but there is an effort to allow them in the medium density residential, but only in situations where they would still be meeting the minimum density requirements. To consider removing the requirement for the homeowner to live on the property. To allow the existing house, particularly some of our smaller
houses. In that case, if the owner owned a rental property, they could develop an ADU on a rental property and make it a dual rent type situation.
Allow an existing house, if it's a small house, to become the accessory dwelling unit, and then you actually build the primary dwelling. And in conjunction with that, to remove the requirement for the square footage of the accessory dwelling to not be more than 40% of the main unit, excluding garage. So now, council said, let's remove that 40% so that as long as it's smaller than, it will still be accessory. But maintain a 750 square foot maximum size. Remove the requirement for on-site parking space in most cases. So if there's parking on the street, both now and as planned in the future, then no on-site parking would be required. If there was on-site parking required, that could be gravel if there was a paved driveway leading to it. Council asked that we consider relaxing the design requirements, but we're not very specific about what that means. So they want it to not be as onerous as it is now, but still have some design requirements so that we're not just allowing anything. So that's in particular what I want you all to start thinking about, because we're going to need some direction on that as we go into the public hearing process.
Well, like the mini homes or whatever they're called that you see, you know, that they could just bring in and sit down and that'd be it.
Right, so that's the next one, that we would allow manufactured homes or those mobile structures, mini homes or tiny homes, as long as they met the building code. So that's the direction council's given in terms of code amendments. And at this point, I can answer questions, but just as a reminder, what's before you tonight is the citizen involvement portion. And then in here, I've recommended that we have at least one, potentially more work sessions on the actual code amendments so that we can work through those in terms of what your recommendation would be as it goes into public hearing and then on to council for a final public hearing and decision.
And your recommendation for the citizen involvement plan, you've included in here for us.
So this is my slideshow. That's really to provide the background. I'm assuming you have read the draft citizen involvement plan. So at this point, I would like to hear your ideas about what to change, add, exclude, terms of doing the public outreach for the code in particular. And like I said, I will take notes in terms of, if you have ideas about just more general outreach about promoting accessory dwelling units, and I'll incorporate that into a strategy for the general outreach effort.
Well, I think that, this is my opinion, I think, you know, the council has been working for some time on some of these concepts around accessory dwelling units. I think, you know, they understand the community and the citizens of Springfield that they represent pretty well. I know there are probably, I mean, there are in more affluent neighborhoods, there could be some pushback as to some of the code revisions that you've listed. You know, I think, you know, the key is the citizen involvement piece is to garner some feedback on some of this.
That's right.
And I don't know that you're going to have universal acceptance. You know, a couple of things that you said, I think that the parking issue in some neighborhoods where the streets are narrower and some of those types of things could raise some concerns for folks that have lived there forever and now there already may be parking issues on their streets, I think. Not that it can't be overcome, but I think that may be one of the outcomes. So, I think as broadly as we can reach out to the citizenry and get some feedback, it's really difficult to get this type of feedback oftentimes. You're going to find probably rental owners and property owners that this is going to be really welcome because they have potential for not a lot of upfront costs to produce some additional revenue from their rental properties. So I think you're going to get a mix. And so, you know, looking through your plan for citizen involvement, you know, I think you're talking about doing the typical types of things that you do. And I think, you know, it's good periodically to have, and this has been done several times since I've been on the Planning Commission, to have a show and tell, and invite folks from the community to come in, and so that you can throw some examples up and talk about. There's some real positive potential and opportunity here to produce some livable spaces for some of those folks that are just on the borderline. So I think it makes a lot of sense, but you know, I think it's getting that citizen involvement so that they can understand it and understand how it will be impacted. From a code standpoint, I think we really need to look at, that's a very attractive manufactured dwelling unit, you know. And the way it's nested into the kind of the, it wouldn't probably be highly visible necessarily from the street or anything like that. And I think that type of thing makes a lot of sense. Although there are lots of, you know, there are second story things that can be done. There are lots of different opportunities. You gave the three examples of interior, attached, and detached. And I think any of those, depending on the specifics of the property, could work very, very well. The code piece is how it's done and how it's done thoughtfully, so that it isn't an eyesore, so it doesn't cause the parking issues, so that it works well. Yes?
Yeah, I agree with Commissioner James on that. I think that it's got some real positive aspects for the renter owners. I also think there's a tremendous possibility to help people who are renters and advocates for affordable housing. I think I'd be really interested in this. I also agree that there might be some hidden difficulties in regard to the codes, and I might suggest actually doing some form of dare I say, a video PSA that maybe we could submit to the local television station so that people could see that it was going to happen and maybe see a couple of examples of what they might look like. And then people could, you know, who might otherwise show up at the last minute on something like this might be more aware of it in advance.
Yes.
I've indicated in a couple of previous discussions that I'm not totally convinced on this ADU concept, totally sold on it. I know, and staff knows well, that council has discussed this at length, and they've indicated a desire to move forward. So I'm certainly not going to stand in the way, and I'm in favor of moving forward with the necessary steps to begin the process from our end. I'm interested in hearing real estate man Nick's thoughts. One of the concerns that I have is if a ADU property owner decides to sell, what is the marketability of an ADU unit? Because I don't think that first-time buyers primarily are going to be interested in ADU units. I don't think duplex buyers who are investing for income would necessarily be interested. So I'm thinking there's going to be kind of a narrow range of people that are going to be attracted to ADU units, although I realize that even one ADU unit is more than what was previously available, so it's a positive overall, but I do have concerns about the market appeal of ADU properties. So I don't know whether Nick would agree or disagree on that question.
Well, we're gonna bounce to Commissioner Dunn and then Commissioner Landon, and then maybe we'll...
If you still have anything to say,
Commissioner Nelson.
I apologize if I've missed it. I skimmed over it again, but the only... I really appreciate all the groups that we'd be reaching out to in here. The only one I was curious about that I don't think I saw is there a way that we can target anyone who has an ADU on their property currently and make sure that they very specifically get invited? Mostly because I would like to hear what struggles they had in getting that, and are we accomplishing with this the struggles that they had? So there's the dollar side that is always a bonus, but I'd be curious if some of the design standards, if we could get 10 ADU owners in the room and they all say, I didn't have any issues with the design standard, it was this that was my big problem, I think that would be the most crucial feedback I would want to hear. So from the people who have already gone through and done it. So I don't know if there's a way to pick them out in CoreLogic or RealQuest, anyone with an ADU, if there's a way to find them that had done it in the last decade or something, I'd be really curious.
There's been two.
Two, well.
Since 2008. Anyway.
Okay. Yeah, man, it's not as many as I would have wanted.
Not many.
I guess let's make sure that they show up.
Yeah, and what they're going to say is it was a pain in the...
Yeah, I want to make sure that we hear that, too.
Absolutely.
From the people who have tried to do it or did successfully do it. I don't know, maybe if there was any other... If we track inquiries of people who thought about doing it and maybe stopped because of some reason. I don't know. I want to make sure that the solutions are really solving the problems. I think they are, but I think it'd be good to back that up with anyone who tried to before. That was my only thought. Otherwise, I think they are, personally. And then from a lending standpoint, just on the personal profession side, duplexes are attractive to buyers because you can use rent from the other side to help you qualify to purchase the duplex.
Right.
That's not often the case for ADUs. You most often in most loan programs cannot use income from an ADU to purchase that property. So it doesn't help like a duplex does in purchasing, but I do personally think it makes it more more interesting for, I think, my generation's buyer who's looking to have something that already comes with a little bit of an investment opportunity. So I think from my sphere of influence that people would be interested in being able to qualify for a property that had an ADU that they saw some investment potential in.
Potential income. Yeah. Commissioner Landon.
I would assume that, you know, a couple of things have been brought up about titling, and I'm assuming that if you sell the house, that the ADU goes with it.
Oh, sure.
I can't imagine that you'd separate that. I think I would be interested in, if it's available, long-term findings, you know, because we talked originally about homelessness and things like that. And as soon as you start, you know, fitting You know, we talked about, for instance, a rapid rise, you know, 43% rise in cost and yada yada. And some of that is clearly or probably caused by the fact that we have limited urban growth boundaries. When you artificially restrict the supply of land, you drive up demand. So I'm a little curious about long-term effects and about, you know, what is that, what is, if the attempt is to house more homeless people, you know, has that caused issues with neighborhoods? I'm not saying we shouldn't help, but I think it's something that ought to be asked.
Okay, Commissioner Nelson.
I think one of those was one of my clients in the last 2 years, Peter Findell, and he said it was kind of a cumbersome process, and one of the things that he was really frustrated with is it's a separate unit, and the code at the time, and I think this is something you'd want to change, he wasn't allowed to put a stove in it, so because it was not a, so they, he had to have like a hot plate, so even though he's going to live in the property, he wasn't allowed to actually have a stove. And so that would be, you know, one of the things that would be, I don't know if it's in the code, but allowing the people to actually build a unit that they can have a, you know,
well,
all
I'm
the...
I'm guessing he probably wasn't building an accessory dwelling unit. If he was, he would have been required to put a stove in.
I have to ask him what he built, because it's right here off the street.
There's probably, when I say there's been two, that means two permitted, but that doesn't mean that there aren't a lot of separate dwelling units,
or maybe
that
it was a secondary dwelling
per code, that they are, you know, maybe renting what a bedroom to somebody,
right.
And in that case, they
with
weren't
a,
allowed
with a
to
kitchenette
put in
and a
stove.
Separate entrance,
yeah.
But not
right.
Quite two units.
It didn't
units.
Meet all the requirements, but it would be interesting to know why didn't he apply for accessory dwelling unit,
yeah.
Or did he and he was refused and therefore took this other route, and what kept that from being
mm-hmm.
an accessory dwelling unit?
Yeah, I can reach out to him. And the other thing I'd be curious, I mean, I remember I looked at buying a rental property and it had a main house and then another dwelling on it, but I couldn't buy it as an income property and rent both units to two different tenants per the how it was. So I was wondering if like maybe those prior properties would be able to be retro permitted into the new.
That's a good question. So right now, a permitted dwelling unit, accessory dwelling unit, has a deed restriction placed on it.
Yep.
And so that would be a question. Would we then retroactively
mm-hmm.
remove that deed restriction from those previously approved properties?
Yeah.
And
yeah. Commissioner, if I may, too, sometimes when we're talking about two houses on a lot, one might not be legally created non-conforming use. So in a single family district, you might have two houses on there. They may have, be of some vintage,
mm-hmm.
and it may or may not have been a legal conversion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you would not be able to house someone in that second unit unless you did a non-conforming use application to justify that, and we have ways to do that. So you can see how this rapidly moves out into different scenarios, and that's part of what I think Manager Belson's talking about, that if we were to streamline some of this, we'd have less of some of those. So just a note that we might also take a look at non-conforming use two units on a lot.
And that might be an opportunity to get those people retroactively doing whatever to their properties. And then also from like a real estate side, I mean, I think multi-generational housing is going to become more and more popular with the cost of care. Like I just purchased a duplex next to my house, not because I wanted another income property, because I moved my mom into the unit.
Right.
And so I think seeing that as a big value, because you know, people might be able to take advantage of, you know, lowering that cost, be able to take care of their parents or whoever. And the other thing I know that you'll see a lot with these is people either using it as a month-to-month type rental situation or also doing a lot of Airbnb type things. I know I have some clients that bought properties that had one of those type of units on it, and they Airbnb it a lot. So I think they're interesting. I assume, I know Portland's really big on them and they're really pushing them because of their density issues. I personally think they're pretty interesting, and I have a property that I'll probably look into it eventually on. So
yeah, my wife and I have Airbnb'd accessory dwelling units in Bend separate two or three times at least.
Mm-hmm.
It's our probably preferred way to do Bend is in an accessory dwelling unit. So
yeah.
I don't know what their rules are at all, but
So, you know, so probably that was not brought up in your presentation at all, but obviously there's some interest in that as an income, but it doesn't really solve your homelessness issue, but it goes to kind of the bringing people in, you know, from the outside, which is, you know, I mean, there are a lot of reasons for people to come to the Springfield and Eugene area just to visit. And so, yes.
Deed restriction was mentioned, but I'm not clear on what the deed restriction would be.
The property I was looking at, it was like 4 years ago. But what I remember is the primary house was built, and on the back it was a much newer unit, you know, all professionally done. But however, the restriction was on the title that you could live in either or, but you couldn't not live on the property and rent both to two separate tenants. You could rent it, from what I remember, to the same tenant for both units. But if you did two different tenants, then you'd be in violation.
Couldn't use it as a duplex of sorts.
Yeah.
So that's the current code requirement.
Yeah.
Okay. And along with that code requirement, to make sure that that stays in place, we require that a deed restriction be placed on the property so that anybody who purchases that property knows that code requirement.
Yeah. And that property sold for probably realistically $30,000, $40,000 under value because of that restriction. You know, because it would have sold for quite a bit more, I think, if people would have been able to legally do it, and people just didn't want to take that risk. I mean, you can always illegally do it, but
that's a harsh restriction.
Yeah.
Yes.
A couple of things is, number one is, if the resident of an ADU is not there for purposes of income for the property owner, it's just like a relative, are the requirements different, or will they be different, or should they be different for someone who is simply like a relative? That's one question. The other question is, if there's a certain process that a property owner needs to go through to establish an ADU on a given property, what happens if the property owner decides to change the use from an ADU to a regular residence? Is there a decertifying process that would be necessary to reestablish it as a regular single-family resident?
I think it would be, you'd still be able to, if I'm understanding what you're saying, be able to, if it's the new verbiage, you'd be able to rent it to anybody and have any classification. It'd still be on the same lot, so it'd still be a part of that same property. It'd just be like having a guest house.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, in often cases, it isn't even a rental at all.
Mm-hmm.
It simply is a separate living unit for a family member.
Yeah.
And so rental requirements wouldn't really even apply.
Yeah.
Well, generally, back to the plan, I think you've heard some feedback in relation to your interest group outreach, and I know you have the Home Builders Association, the Board of Realtors, NEDCO. You've got several listed there. I think you've heard feedback getting public service announcements out, getting some involvement there, having some open houses, getting folks in, you know, and I think you cover that pretty well in your outreach. This is a very high level outreach kind of guideline, and I would imagine that as you move forward, it'll be more refined, and you'll probably communicate back with the Planning Commission again at some point and keep us involved in how this outreach process goes or is going forward, and put a time frame to it. Have you got a time frame in place for this?
So I'm thinking that, I mean, I don't have a specific time frame, but in my general time frame, I'm thinking if we could do some outreach this summer, have the Planning Commission hold public hearings, and have the council hold public hearings so it's adopted by the end of the calendar year.
In January.
One of those things I was just thinking is, it might be interesting at those forums for people to learn how would they get financing for something like this, you know, and maybe have a couple ideas of, you know, when you go through a bank, when you get an equity line of credit, what would those potential ways that people could finance it? And they may maybe, it would be hard to do it, but just some general idea of cost, what it potentially would cost, because everyone's going to think it's a great idea, but if it's the cost don't make sense, then it's not a good idea. So
on the code front, staff, I would imagine, are going to be primarily responsible for combing through the code to meet those suggested, the council-driven objectives, but at what point will the Planning Commission be brought back in and discuss the code revisions prior to public, a public hearing or anything?
Well, I'm anticipating that we would have a work session where we would go specifically through how to translate. I already pretty much have, but so that you could see how this translates into language. And it's actually pretty easy because it's all in a couple pages of the code.
Yeah.
And there's no other place that I've seen that needs to get changed other than maybe a definition. And so we would have a work session to actually look through that language, particularly talk about the design requirement aspect. I would hopefully have done some outreach before then, as you suggested, and have some more ideas about what that language could be or how we really struggle with that design part, so that we would hone that down so we would have a specific proposal to put out for public to comment on.
Yeah.
Language for
you thinking
that.
Like September time frame for that?
For the public hearing? That sounds good.
Or for our work session?
I mean,
we do have an August recess, right?
You do. And you'll be coming back on the first Tuesday of September.
So do you think you're going to have anything for us in, probably not in July, you're thinking maybe September?
We could have a work session in July. I wouldn't have a lot of input before then, but we could jump right into the code if you
wanted
to.
Well, I think that it would be good, this is my opinion, one of, several, but I think the sooner we could see what kind of code revisions you're thinking about, I think earlier is better for us.
Okay, well then let's schedule it earlier.
I mean, personally, and then, then you're going to get input back to that, and then we might have a secondary opportunity to say, okay, here was your first look at codes, here's the feedback we got, and this is kind of where we are, so that we may have a secondary opportunity before we go into the public hearing phase. And you can have a work session prior to a public hearing.
Absolutely.
You can back that right up, and then public hearing. So I think that would, from my opinion, I think that would be a good approach today.
Does your 6 work for you?
Any day works for me. I mean, I can go as fast as they want to go in terms of getting the code language to them. In terms of doing the public outreach, that's going to take a little more time.
Sure.
But as soon as they're ready for a work session on the code, I can do that.
Yeah. What's your thinking, Commissioner Vose?
Well, I think your thought is correct because, again, there's obviously going to be multiple steps to get this process through to completion. And I think each step, as we analyze what the possibilities are, then we can, again, like you say, provide the feedback to either move it forward or say, well, we're kind of doubtful of this concept. And so I think each step is helpful for...
Serving on the DAC for Development Advisory Committee for how many years did we do that?
Four and a half, I think it was.
I know, this sounds like it's fairly straightforward, but you just start diving into the code and you start looking at those revisions and changes, and sometimes there are overlaps in areas that you don't really, it doesn't look like at first blush. So I would suggest sooner is better. If the council is really looking at taking some action on this at the first of the year or around the first of the year.
I think, though, the outreach is beneficial just because you get a different perspective.
Absolutely.
From the people that are living it.
Yeah.
So I think that's an important piece.
It is a super important piece, and that's why we're here. We're serving as the Committee on Citizen Involvement. So does that sound like a good plan?
Sounds peachy.
Commissioners? Yes?
I want to get back to Nick again. The question of market appeal for an ADU as opposed to a regular residence, because there, in my mind, there's a limited number of people that would specifically be seeking an ADU property. Is, do you feel that's much of a factor as far as market appeal? Because, again, if you have them, you just have anyone want to buy them.
I think you'll, I don't think you're going to get like a, you know, a huge rush of people putting these in, so there will be a few put in, and so there's always going to be a certain amount of buyers that are looking for that, so I don't think it would be a detriment, in my personal opinion, because I think getting it financed, going through that process, only a few people are going to be able to afford to do it, and so most likely the people that do that will be kind of a unique property, and that's kind of a fun thing to market. So
yeah, I think probably what you'll find are two primary focuses out of the gate. It's going to be those folks that want to develop something that they can have a parent or someone live in their home, and it's not that difficult for them to do. I think making it easier, I think that's going to be an incentive. I think the others are going to be those folks, those rental owners that will see this as an opportunity to expand rental income on a single housing, a single property. And I think that's going to be an advantage. And I think that could be a real benefit for some of those folks that are lower income that would like to be able to get into a unit. And so I think there's going to be an opportunity there.
Well, I think the bottom line is, with all the different options, I mean, obviously we have a housing crisis for low-income individuals. No matter how many units derive from new regulations, it has to be a plus. So, sure. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that it's something that we need to move forward on as a whole, as a city.
And the lack of affordability for even middle-income people now, too, if they can, as Sean said, if they can purchase a place that has opportunity for some income and help them meet payments on a home, then I think it's going to be good for the market as well.
Yeah.
Okay. We're half an hour over time.
Man.
Do we have all of our questions answered? Do you have a clear path forward?
I do. I will come back as soon as I can get on the agenda for the next meeting.
You are on the agenda for September 6th.
All right.
It's probably going to be a Wednesday, though, isn't it?
It's a Wednesday.
Yeah, I was thinking the holiday week.
Yeah, Monday the holiday.
Yeah.
September 6th, I'm going to be in Maui.
Skype you in.
So would you like us to schedule one in July?
We can't do it in July?
You'd be able to be
She said she could do it any time.
July 18th? Yeah. July 5th or July
18th? Let's do it in July
18th. I'm not here on the
5th,
so.
Yeah,
July 18th.
July 5th.
You're on July 18th.
You probably canceled by the 5th anyway.
Actually, I mean, I could be back on the 5th, but I'm coming back that day.
Let's do the 18th.
Absolutely.
You guys will have a 2-hour work session.
That's all right. Do we have any public hearing on the 18th?
Not yet.
Piece of cake.
That works.
Let's do it on the 18th.
I think as soon as you could get us those proposed code changes, too, would be, you know, even by email, would be great, too.
So that we can at least begin to review them if they're complex at all, you know, so we have an opportunity to.
Okay.
I
will work with Brett.
You're getting pushed.
No, it's fine.
All right.
I'll work with Brenda on how to get those out to you in advance.
Anything else for the CCI? If not, we stand adjourned.
Boom.
And the pens are from the city manager's office. If
awesome.
You want to take them.
They're less than $50, so we can accept them.
That's right.
Perfect.